It's hard to get your loved ones to change their habits, let alone change world history. But that's exactly what happened with apartheid.
A demonstrator has run right through the play.
Australians and millions of others took a stand and helped to bring the racist South African regime to its knees. I'm Sisonke Msimang, and join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. ABC Rewind, Boycott. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's more than 50 years since humans went anywhere near the moon. But that's about to change. After various delays, NASA's Artemis II mission is set to launch sometime over the Easter weekend. If all goes to plan, four astronauts will ride in a big figure of eight, loop around the far side of the moon, and fly home again. How will they do all this? What is the point? And why is this happening now? Today, it's time for a pre-mission briefing. This is Lab Notes from ABC Radio National. I'm Jonathan Webb, and today I'm joined by science reporter Jacinta Bowler, who is covering this story for the Science Unit. Hi, Jacinta.
Thanks for having me.
So, Artemis II is part of this big Artemis program for NASA. What's the aim of this whole enterprise?
Well, the aim is to go back to the moon. So we haven't been there for a very long time, for over 50 years. And there is a lot of hope that Artemis will be able to take people not only back to the moon, but create a moon base so that eventually we can go further into Mars and beyond.
Why is NASA particularly keen on this right now? Are we back in a space race?
This is a complicated question. I think it really depends who you ask. So, yes, there is definitely a bit of a race. It's not the same race that we had back in the 50s and 60s, when it came to coming to the moon for the first time. Now the race is very much about China and India and a lot of other countries like that that are trying very hard to also get to the moon. But there is also a lot of private industry and people wanting to get to the moon without NASA involved at all.
Let's talk about launch dates. Originally, they had 5 days, was it, to launch this thing, maybe in February. Then there were 5 dates in March, and there were 6 days in April. They were all laid out as part of the plan that could be used. But now, obviously, February and March have sailed past. So when is this huge rocket actually going to get off the ground, Jacinta?
They haven't done a great job so far at keeping to timing. But, you know, again, that's understandable. These things do need to be double-checked. There were some issues with a hydrogen leak, happened in February, and then they basically said, nope, we're taking it back. We're putting it back in its little booth that it goes to.
Booth.
Yeah, very large booth.
I think it's the biggest single story building in the world. Like it's what they call the vehicle assembly building in at Cape Canaveral, which is immense. But I love the idea of popping the rocket back in its little box.
Yeah, it's a very big box, I suppose. So it's gone back to its very big box and they've tried to fix it. So they're going to go again. There's no wet dress rehearsal, which is where they kind of double check everything. They do everything as if they were going to launch and then they basically stop just before launch. But they're not doing that this time. They've already done one and kind of found these issues. So hopefully these things are fixed. And I imagine that maybe if they see issues, they'll push it back a couple of days. But at this stage, first date that they could do is April the 1st. And then there's also options for the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. Now that's American time. So in Australia, it'll be 2nd to the 7th.
Which is literally Maundy Thursday. So the Thursday before Easter, then right through the weekend, through to the Tuesday. Those are the times it might get off the ground for Australians.
And then the last day, if everything goes wrong, if everything goes bad, hopefully not, 30th is the last date that they've got currently for a mission available. So the reason why they do that, there's a bunch of different reasons, but one of the big ones is that the moon needs to be in the right spot for them to be able to launch, get off the ground and get there. And also because of the way that Artemis is built, it can't be in the shade for more than 90 minutes.
Wow.
If it's in the shade for more than 90 minutes, then it will potentially, there'll be issues with the comfort of the astronauts because it's got solar panels on it and that's powering most of their life support and temperature control and all those kind of things. Everything needs to be perfectly positioned. And so they definitely needs to make sure that they do it on the right days.
Tell me about the spaceship that's going to take the astronauts actually around the moon, but that's sitting on top of a huge thing that NASA calls the Space Launch System. What should we know about about that?
Yeah, so the Space Launch System has been in the works for a really long time. They've been working on this since the Apollo missions happened. There have been plenty of other space launches, but we haven't gone to the moon. And so to be able to make a rocket that goes to the moon, they really needed to do quite a lot of work to re-engineer a lot of the things that happened during the Apollo missions. So this, it's $40 billion it's taken to make this particular rocket. It's the most powerful one they've developed, according to NASA. And it also is 100 meters tall. So that's slightly smaller than the Apollo mission, the rocket that took the Apollo missions to the moon, but not by much. And yeah, it runs on hydrogen and oxygen, exactly the same as the Apollo missions. And really, the bare bones of it, there are differences, of course, but it's quite similar. There's the best way to be able to launch somebody into space, and that's with a bunch of fuel and you're sitting on top of it.
Once you light the candle, there's not much you can do.
No.
But there's one thing that's different from Apollo, which they've kind of added in from the shuttle era, which is a couple of booster rockets on either side. Is that right?
Yes, true. So, so instead of the one big rocket that you might imagine from those original Apollo days, it now has kind of these three rockets. The first two of those will come off quite early in the mission. I think it's something like the first few minutes, you'll lose those two side rockets and they fall into the ocean, which is fun. I can't imagine if you're out fishing that day. And then the second rocket comes off a lot later, a couple of minutes later after that. Yeah, and this is a very big rocket as well. So the actual Orion spacecraft, the bit on top, is 25 stories off the ground. So the astronauts actually have to catch an elevator that has, like, there's a button. There's if you go and you see the elevator button on this thing, there's ground and then there's 25. And then you go all the way up and you get in that rocket and you just sit there and hope that it's going to all work out.
So once the launch finally gets the whole thing off the ground, the rockets fall away. What should we know about what happens over the next 10? Is it 10 days?
Yes. So it's going to take 10 days to do this. The first few minutes is obviously the very exciting bit. It's launching. It goes through something called max-Q, which is the point where the rocket is kind of at its highest pressure and it's most likely to have some kind of problem. Once it gets past that, it's going to continue going up and up and up, and it ends up in this kind of quite elliptical orbit of Earth. So it stays there for about 24 hours, and then there's a final burn that takes it into this moon orbit. The way it works is quite interesting. So they kind of jet off in one direction. The moon isn't there yet. And so the moon comes in.
Because the moon's orbiting around the Earth.
Exactly.
So they're heading towards empty space, but the moon's heading there as well.
Yes. And so they actually have to catch the moon as it's coming. So the two of them kind of come together. And then if you do it right, which you really hope they do it right, they just catch it. They do one little loop and they actually don't need to do anything here. The way they've set this up is that it'll be 3 days traveling up to the moon. They don't need to do anything else to be able to loop around. They're caught in the moon's gravity and then they come back towards the Earth and then they come back and land. So once they've done that final push away from the Earth towards the spot that the moon isn't yet but will be, they actually don't need to do anything else to be able to make sure they come back safely to Earth.
What are the risky parts? NASA has been publicly very confident that everything's going to go according to plan, but there have been these delays, which in some ways is expected, but there's also been some criticisms about potential safety issues. What is the deal there?
There's a couple of different things. I think one of the things that we mentioned before is this issue with the hydrogen leaks. You don't want hydrogen leaking out of your rocket before it launches for obvious reasons. So that has hopefully been fixed now that they're going back onto the launch pad. The other thing that has been noted in media and really well in the Challenger Legacy series on Radio National has been about the heat shield. So when astronauts come back to Earth, they go through just an amazing amount of atmosphere, extremely fast, extremely hot. And so you need to be able to protect the astronauts so that the whole spaceship doesn't burn up. And so what they do is they put this special coating on the bottom of the spacecraft, and then they kind of make sure that the spacecraft goes with that coating facing downwards as it continues into the Earth. Now, that's all well and good, but in Artemis 1, we did see some damage to that heat shield.
Definitely one to watch. Jacinta, thanks so much for sharing your lab notes with me.
Thank you for having me.
That was science reporter Jacinta Bowler. And definitely do check out episode 5 in particular of the series The Challenger Legacy. That's in the podcast feed Science Friction. And keep following that podcast because there'll be more for you soon if you're interested in the Artemis 2 mission as it unfolds. This episode of Lab Notes was produced on Gadigal, Wurundjeri and Menangnunga country. Our producer is Fiona Pepper. And I'm Jonathan Webb. I'll catch you next week. Before I go, I have a quick clarification on last week's episode of Lab Notes about the Super K strain of influenza and the flu season. One of our listeners, Harry, wrote in asking, if one strain of flu has been eradicated and removed from the flu vaccine this year, but then the vaccines are also protecting us against the new Super K strain, haven't we just dropped one strain and added another, which would mean there are still 4 components in total? Which is an excellent question, and here's my explanation. You're right, Harry, the vaccine used to have 4 strains of inactivated flu viruses in it, but one of those has disappeared from circulation, so it's been left out of the 2026 vaccines. Meanwhile, what the WHO panel has done is make sure that one of the 3 strains that is in the vaccines this year is genetically similar to Super K. So nothing extra has been added. It's just that they've picked the best available strain of influenza A H3N2 for the vaccine, and it's one that will generate an immune response that should help protect us against Super K if we catch it. I hope that makes sense. You can drop us a line too, like Harry did, if you've got a question or a suggestion for something we should cover on the show. Just send an email to labnotes@abc.net.au.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.